The following radio program was made possible by partners of Sought Out Global Ministries.
So we're there at his aunt's house over here in Innishardon having dinner, and there's just five of us, candlelit dinner, and this woman's telling these stories about how she was in a concentration camp.
And
I'm just fascinated by this woman. Midway through dinner, candlelit dinner, intimate, there's five of us, and there's this woman off the side taking notes, no less. Like, okay, this is kind of peculiar. And this woman, you know, probably in her early mid-80s, looks over the table to me and she says, "So tell me, Stan, how long have you known the Messiah?"
Right.
So I'm going, well, yeah, last night at about 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. I mean, I knew that this was showtime.
This was a God moment.
This is a God moment.
Yes.
And I said, last night at 2:30 in the morning. And so she just blurted out, you know, a babe. And anyways, the woman was Corrie Ten Boom.
Coming up next on Sought Out Global Radio, we discover the life and testimony of Stan Lander. Can you imagine being a Christian for mere hours and the first person you meet is Corrie Ten Boom? Well, it happened, and so did some miracles. This is one testimony you don't want to miss as we look into the life of Stan Lander. That's coming up next right here on Sought Out Global Radio. And we thank you for joining us on Sought Out Global Radio today. I'm your host, Mark Grote. Before we get to today's radio program, we have one quick programming note for you. We're changing the order of our broadcast program for the next few weeks, and we want you to know if you're tuning in for the third installment of our program on the presence of God, we are moving that program to October 1st. And as usual, all our programs will be loaded up to our website so you can tune into any podcast and listen to our program or any series in its entirety. But if you're looking for our last broadcast of The Presence of God, be sure to tune in on October 1st. We are making this change so that we can bring you a very special testimony of a man whose story really touched us. So joining me on today's radio program is Sought Out Ministry leaders Herb and Bethany Marks. And our special guest today is Stan Lander. And Stan joins us. He's a senior account executive from Krista Media. And Stan, you have just a tremendous story. But before we get to any of that and we share, this is really a great testimony time. And we feel it's really important for you, the listener, and for us as well to hear testimonies of God's goodness.
Yes.
And how God is moving and how he's doing something in people's lives. He is a good God. He is alive and well, and he is very much present in our lives.
Very much, yes. This is really exciting, Mark.
It is, and I'm so excited to have you here, Stan. I love it when we have guests and we get to talk about God's goodness, and you have a great story. But before we really get into that, first, I just want to welcome you. I want to welcome you for being here and taking time out of your day to come and be on the broadcast with us today.
Well, it's a treat to be here with you, Mark, and with Herb and Bethany. It's entering this room even. It's been one of these chaotic days, and you come in here and you just feel the presence of God. So,
yes.
Oh,
thank you for inviting me.
That's exciting for him to say that, Mark. Honey, what Stan doesn't know is just before he got here, we experienced the presence of the Lord come and just shower us for a moment. And Teresa, Mark's wife, was the four of us were on the table. It was a touch of God that came down. So, Stan, you're on
Enjoy.
You're on it.
So, let's start with you, Stan. Let's talk a little bit about you. Tell me a little bit about who you are, where you come from, and your background, and just tell the listener a little bit about Stan Lander.
Okay. First off, I'm from Seattle. I've been married for 30 years. This last April.
Congrats, 30 years. That's great.
It's been awesome. And I wish my wife could have joined us today, but perhaps another time down the road. I have two kids who are both here in Seattle as well, in their early 20s, a son and a daughter. You know, I grew up here, and I was part of a semi-Orthodox Jewish family. Grew up in the Seward Park area, where there's a lot of the synagogues. And, I'd say probably around age 18, somewhere between high school and college, I got in trouble with the law. I'd always, you know, I'd worked at Nordstrom. I was high school, you know, president, good student, all those kind of things. But lo and behold, this was back in the later, mid-70s. I was over in Eastern Washington, and I got busted for pot. My car was taken. There was the town was deputized. It ended up on Dry Falls outside of Sun Lakes, and lo and behold, mm-hmm. I ended up in jail. So that summer, as I was awaiting my trial, a girlfriend gave me a Bible that included the New Testament. You know, and I had said the Shema, you know, Deuteronomy every day of my life. Mm. I had gone to Hebrew school 3 days a week. I had been bar mitzvahed, all those typical things of a traditional Jewish upbringing, celebrated all the holidays, all the feasts. During that time, awaiting my trial, I read the Psalms, and they were the only thing that gave me comfort. And that was really the beginning of my spiritual quest. And, you know, as I look back at having a personal relationship with God, it was the first time that people said, we'll be praying for you. And my association with prayer was, you know, things that you do on the specific holidays and the liturgies. Well, to make this story shorter, I won my case. And it was a felony. It was really movie material. You know, again, it ended up on this 500-foot cliff, and they, but they put me in jail. I was with a friend. I was arrested. He wasn't, even though it was primarily his pot. And they put me in jail. My dad had to come and get me out the next day. During that month and a half, and again, this is between high school and college, I started reading the Psalms. And as I mentioned, they were the only thing that gave me any kind of comfort, any kind of hope. And when I won my case, I knew it wasn't just because of having great attorneys, but there was something else going on.
I
took that back to, you know, okay, people are praying for me. So I started college literally the next week, and was in a fraternity. There were a couple Christian guys there in that house that were praying for me. But it wasn't until 18 months later, and during that time, God just wooed me to him. And I started reading the New Testament, of all things, and I started finding, you know, these guys that were in the Old Testament showing up in the New Testament. And even back when I was five years old, I asked my Hebrew school teacher, why don't we read the New Testament?
Oh, that's good.
Well, I was rather precocious, but that was my earliest recollection of anything of a Christian kind. So I started reading the New Testament now, and I found all these guys were showing up from the Old Testament, and it's like, what are these guys doing in the New Testament? This is the book of the Gentiles. And I've heard this from some other people, Jewish people since then, that had a very similar kind of experience.
Sure.
And I knew that it wasn't just by accident that I won this case, but it was like being given a new life. So this went on for 18 months. Finally, you know, and God just wooed me, brought people into my life, and but I always knew, as a Jew, I could not accept Jesus. You know, you can be anything but that. And in fact, that's how often Jewish people identify who they are.
Can you explain that a little bit from a Jewish perspective, as opposed to a lot of people who are Christians or maybe weren't raised in the Christian faith? They found God later in life, and that, 'cause they may not understand some of that pressure or some of that that particular Orthodox teaching. What is some of the opposition pressure that you get?
Yeah, it's a good question. Basically, Mark, I think it goes back to a lot of the anti-Semitism that's been perpetrated. You know, Paul talks about the blinders over the Jewish people's eyes. And you can be secular, you could be New Age, anything, you know, that's non-monotheistic, because there's obviously very, you know, a tremendous amount of variations within Orthodox Judaism to conservative Reform, you know, different strains. But basically, you've decided to encamp with the enemy. Because Christ is often thought of among the Jewish people as being the cause of so much hatred and anti-Semitic behavior over centuries and centuries towards the Jewish people.
Wow.
So a lot in the Jewish community tie it back to Christianity.
History.
Absolutely, to history.
Yes.
Yeah, whether it's the pogroms in Russia to, you know, my family's both, I'm a blend of my mom was Sephardic. You know, you may have seen articles recently in the paper about, they're the Spanish Jews that were expelled from Spain in the late 1400s and moved to, you know, it's only about 3% of world Jewry. My father's side is Ashkenazic from Russia. Likewise, you know, with the pogroms. My family came over here in the early 1900s because of religious persecution. So then to go and, you know, be part of the enemy's camp, and it's not stated so much, but...
It's understood.
And in many cases, it's almost like... I've heard of situations where they'll actually, well, there's an example in the movie The Jazz Singer where Laurence Olivier tears his garment. He's come out to visit his son, Neil Diamond, and he sees that he's living with a non-Jewish woman, mm-hmm. not following in the grandfather and the grandfather's footsteps as a cantor, and he rents the garment and basically he starts singing what's called the mourner's Kaddish, and he's saying, "You're dead to me."
Oh my gosh. Wow.
It's a very, very powerful scene if you haven't seen that.
I haven't.
So that's the kind of mentality that I faced. And yet at the same time, God is compelling me through truth and love and drawing me to him in a way that I could not deny. So finally, to bring this full circle, I accepted the Lord by myself in a fraternity
room. That had to be a huge step. With all that you've just shared, the fact that you accepted the Lord.
What it could cost you.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, how many years ago was this?
40.
40?
Yeah, 40. Almost 40, just under 40 years.
40 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, just shy of 40 years.
Were you afraid to tell your dad?
And the really bizarre thing, and I want to just finish off the rest of that. But the bizarre thing was when he asked me, it was a couple months later, and it was in synagogue on Yom Kippur, the high holiday, the Day of Atonement. And he said, "You want to hear something really funny, Stan?" He said, "I was at a wedding this summer, and I just returned from being in New York for 3 months. And it's during the rabbi's sermon, Yom Kippur, I'll never forget it." He said, "I was at a wedding this summer, and Rabbi so-and-so, not to mention his name, came up to me, and he said, he heard you became a Jesus freak." And he expected me to, I'm sure, just say, "Oh, that is hilarious." You know, where did you hear that?
Oh, my gracious.
But when I did
refute it.
Yeah. And when I didn't, I mean, his face just was like I'd put a spear in his belly.
Oh,
wow.
It was painful.
And here you were standing in that moment and not denying Christ.
No. But in an Orthodox synagogue that I'd grown up in where I first shared that with him. And that evening we had a really good talk. About those things. But back to my accepting the Lord, I prayed for a sign. I didn't know why I was, but that night I did pray because I said, "Lord, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, but I can't go on." And I thought one day, you know, I'll accept the Lord when I'm over in Israel we'll be in the Jordan River, you know, we'll invite 150 people, you know, we'll do it like a bar mitzvah. Well, when God finally said, "Tonight's the night," you know, I got down on my knees and I had a real encounter with God that night. You could have scraped me off the ceiling, but I didn't share it with a soul.
Wow.
You know, I didn't tell anybody. So the next day I'm at college here at the University of Washington, and I'm just, you know, I am a new creature. So that afternoon I get back to the fraternity. There's a note on my door, you know, "Want to join me for dinner?" And it was actually the president of the fraternity who's currently in broadcasting here at another group. And I keep in touch with him. And so I went to his aunt's house. He said, "My aunt's a great cook." You know, okay, that's always a, you know.
When you're single.
You're in college.
Yes, in college. Remember those days.
Yeah. Remember those days. Yeah. So I said, you know, "Count me in. Let me run, you know, get showered up and I'll join you."
Yeah.
So we're there at his aunt's house over here in Innishardon having dinner. And there's just five of us, candlelit dinner. And this woman's telling these stories about how she was in a concentration camp.
Wow, yes.
And I'm just fascinated by this woman. Midway through dinner, candlelit dinner, intimate, there's five of us. And there's this woman off the side taking notes, no less. Like, okay, this is kind of peculiar. And this woman, you know, probably in her early, mid-80s, looks over the table to me and she says, "So tell me, Stan, how long have you known the Messiah?" And I'm like, you know, I could feel
your collar tightens up, right?
So I'm going, well, yeah, last night at about 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. I mean, I knew that this was showtime.
This was a God moment.
This is a God moment.
Yes.
And I said last night at 2:30 in the morning. And so she just blurted out, you know, "A babe." And anyways, the woman was Corrie Ten Boom.
That's so amazing. She's the first person you shared that you had accepted Jesus as Messiah.
Exactly.
Really?
That is amazing.
I didn't know who she was, and I didn't learn the significance of it till probably weeks later.
Wow.
But she stayed up for about 2 hours and just prophesied into my life all these wonderful, wonderful things that I will never forget and has propelled me forward many a time over the years since.
Wow. Prophetic words from Corrie Ten Boom.
Yeah. That's,
you're just a
only
day
God.
Old.
Only
a
God.
A day old in God.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe it was a
she was setting an establishment with you. And I mean, her response was, a babe.
A babe.
And she was creating a foundation, prophetically with you.
Oh, and she just stayed That's up and spoke words over my life that it was like God had brought down one of his choice angels just to welcome me into the kingdom and say, kid, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Wow.
And you both had survived, you know, the same spirit of intimidation and coming against the Jews, coming against, you know, those in the concentration camp, you know, that I don't even know how to articulate it, but you guys both survived the same onslaught. From the same place, the same demonic spirit, the same force.
Yeah.
And here you are, brand new, less than 24 hours, and you meet someone who survived a concentration camp.
And I thought I was getting the greater blessing, but about a year ago, a friend of ours knew the woman who was with her, and they were working on the hiding place at the time, and found out that this was the first city in a national tour that they were on, and that they were equally blessed by having this young Jewish man profess his faith back at a time when there weren't a lot of us accepting the Lord.
I love it.
Wow.
And it encouraged them to go on with this tour, of which Seattle was the first stop.
Now I have to ask the question, how did the Lord Jesus draw you to him? You had that moment. You could be scraped off the ceiling. Can you describe to us, you've done well at describing this journey of the New Testament and the Jewish people from the Old Testament being in it. How did you make the bridge over to Jesus as your Messiah?
From that point forward or prior to that?
The psalm spoke to you.
Yes.
The people were praying for you in your fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the moment, the turning in you? Was it a slow evolving to being convinced that he was the Jewish Messiah?
That was the most exciting time because I started practicing what I was reading in the New Testament. And I just became convicted of the truth, of the undeniable truth. And I could no longer keep that at bay. And I also wanted to become a more loving person. That was the desire of my heart. And as I saw that there were these truths that were being lived out in my own life and seeing relationships, reconciliation, just different things that I longed to see, manifest themselves, it just became so obvious. And again, you know, God sent different people into my life, many, many different people that were sharp and were the epitome of that. I think it's 1 Peter 3:15, always being ready to give a defense. Sanctify Christ as Lord in your heart, always being ready to give a defense for the hope that's in you, but with gentleness and reverence.
Right.
And God sent those kind of people into my life. They didn't beat me over the head, but they had an apt answer for me, and they loved me, and I had questions. But in the back of my mind, it's like, I can't do this. But at the same time, it's like, I have to do this, and I finally did.
So you were at the intersection of real relationship with God on an intimate level, and you had to cross over and go against the grain of what you had been told all your life.
Absolutely.
You had to.
Yeah.
You came to a why in the road in your life, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And I finally got that place where it's like, this is more important. If I lose my family, lose friends, lose, you know, your rights within the Jewish community, all those kind of things, I'm willing to do that.
Yeah.
you were asking him specifically if there was a pivotal moment where you really felt a shift in your life in terms of where you locked in on Jesus and you knew that you knew inside yourself that this was the truth and this was for you. Or was it a slow kind of a baking process in you?
Yeah, it was more that slow baking process.
Except you came to that point where you had to make a life-altering choice. Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone back and wondered if you'd made that, if you'd gone that other route? Have you ever considered the difference your life would be?
To a degree.
Yeah.
To a degree. There have been a couple times, sure, where I wonder if I had not gone this path, what life might have been like. But there's never, ever been any kind of regret. And interestingly enough, and I've never been asked that question. That's a great question.
The thing I'm taken most with is your decision in the face of your heritage to turn to Christ. And it's because of what you found in the Word. The Word came alive to you and led you into truth. And you've made a statement about truth, Stan, that it was truth that... Anyway, I'm so taken by this that this is outstanding.
Okay, so she asked you if you ever regretted it. And so tell me a little bit about that thought process. Specifically, is it the strong tie to tradition? Is it the family? Is it was it the Word of God itself and your connection to it from the Old Testament and the Torah? What were the things that caused you to hesitate from your past about
like
the question?
Like that poignant moment where you actually made the choice.
What did you feel like it could cost you?
The cost, and it's funny because before accepting the Lord, I actually read Bonhoeffer, The Cost of Discipleship.
Yeah, Bonhoeffer, yeah.
You know, about costly grace versus cheap grace. I knew that it would cost me relationships with the people that I love the most, potentially, that I'd grown up with. You know, like I said, I went to Hebrew school 3 days a week. And over the years, that in fact, you know, came to being. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the cost has been that I don't really fit in with the Jewish community anymore. And there's a part of me that doesn't fit in with the church as well. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I would have, that I grieve to a degree. And yet at the same time, I've had tremendous opportunity to teach on the Jewish holidays in a number of churches over the years and see the enthusiasm. So it's not any kind of indictment. It's just more of an identity issue that there's a lot of my, you know, and that's why when we talk about converting, well, I don't even see myself as converting necessarily because I haven't lost the Jewishness.
Right.
Oh, interesting. That's really great.
And even the word completion doesn't adequately fulfill.
Yeah.
You know, and people ask me, well, what are you? Are you Jewish? Are you Christian?
Messianic? What are you?
Messianic?
So the answer is yes.
Yes. I'm both. I'm 100%.
Yes.
Undeniably.
Both. Everything that God made you. God made you.
Yeah.
Who you are.
100%. Yeah.
And he gave you that past. He gave you that lineage. And we know that heritage is so important to God. Has God tied that together with you? Has Jesus, you know, just your relationship and your walk with God, has he tied that heritage back for you a little bit and who you are today?
Very much so. And I want to embrace that even more. And I'm able to celebrate that. And my wife, who isn't Jewish, you know, loves the Jewish holidays and the traditions. But there's not a real community. Bethany had asked me earlier, I was starting to say about redeeming, very recently I had an experience where I went back to this synagogue, and I realized this is a little bit hard to articulate, but I was so embraced when I went back there. Uh-huh. And I saw these friends of mine. Here I am carrying, you know, like four boxes of these Jewish, you know, pastries and
come on.
I mean, I'm like, you know, and they're like, and they hadn't seen me. And I've got to say that there's an aspect of love and community there.
Yeah.
And I think when Paul talks to us about making the Jewish people jealous, provoking them to jealousy, I think a lot of that is a love in action that the Jewish community understands, and that as the church, we need to get our arms around in a much deeper, expressive way.
Thanks, Dan. We hope you enjoyed this first part of our three-part series on the testimony of Stan Lander. I can assure you that his story only gets better. Be sure to tune in next week for part two. A quick check on the event calendar. We have one more home encounter coming up on September 13th in Everett. Also, remember on September 26th, this time we'll be at New Life Center in Everett. Also, Stan Lander will be joining us at this event, so be sure to drop in and say hello. For more information on our event calendar, please go to sawedoutglobal.com and just follow the links to events. Well, that's all the time we have for today for our special guest, Stan Lander, Herb and Bethany Marks. I'm Mark Grote. Be sure to join us again next week for the next episode in this series on the testimony of Stan Lander, right here on Sought Out Global Radio.
The preceding program was made possible by partners of Sought Out Global Radio, calling you into greatness. If you would like to sign up to become partners with Sought Out Global Radio, you can do that at SoughtOutGlobal.com.